Okay. I know that I'm not going to get to the in-class logic exercise. That will be put into next week. I wrote a note that I just said I might not, and I didn't. The logic assignment then becomes your only assignment for this week. And I basically will copy and paste the other one and put it in for next week. Okay? So, the first thing I want to look at here is the presentation on logical if structures. Presentation on logical if structures. Okay. So bring that up because it's easier to read it lots of times at your seat than it is up here. And I've been having trouble with the smart board, so periodically I'm going to go look at it and see if it's capturing things. Okay. So this basically is just going through if statements and going through how if statements can be constructed. If you understand if statements, you're going to be bored. If you aren't sure you understand if statements, then hopefully this will be helpful. Okay, so we're starting out, and I'm showing a flowchart and the pseudocode that goes with it. So I'm saying if amount is greater than 5,000, then what I want to do is take amount, multiply it by 10, and store it in answer. And then I have an end if. Now again, this isn't any particular programming language. This is pseudocode. This is writing out in English what you want to do, and then you will have to implement it in some programming languages. Okay? The if and the end if maybe have curly braces around them. The language you use may actually say end if. It may say end if as one word. It all depends on what language you're using. But pseudocode that you work out the logic in a way that looks a lot like a language, okay? I actually prefer flowcharts. I like the visual look of them, but it all depends on which you find easiest to work with, okay? Sometimes I do both. Sometimes I write a logic flowchart and then write it in pseudocode before I put it into a language. So this is going to simply say, if I have a situation, I want to test and see if amount is greater than 5,000. If it is, I want to do something, and then I'm done. On the next one, it is getting into, let's have a no now. So if amount is greater than 5,000, do this, else do something else. Okay, so I'm now gonna know if it is equal, I do the yes route. The no is the else. Okay, so else I wanna do something else. The no is the else. And then I end the if to say that the if is completely done. On the next slide, I'm looking at two things in an AND relationship. I want inventory code to be equal to A, and amount is greater than 5,000. And if both of those are true, I move OK. Now, the way I write this in pseudocode, which is similar to the way I write it in programming, is I say, if inventory code equals A, and then I drop down to ask the next question. Only if inventory code equals A do I drop down. If it's not, I drop out and hit the end if. So if amount is greater than 5,000, move OK to message. Now, I forgot the second okay, quotes on OK. That would be problematic if I was writing it in a program, but this is pseudocode, it's for people. Okay, if they can't figure out there's supposed to be a number quote there, then that's their problem. Okay, so I have if amount is greater than 5,000, move OK to message. So they both have to be true. And then I end if, And the way you end if is this first end if goes to the first unattached if. And then this end if comes along. It can't have that if because that's already got something. So it attaches up to the top if. So the if basically attaches itself to the first available, the end if, I'm sorry. The end if attaches itself to the first available if. The first if that doesn't already have an end if. Okay. So that's how it attaches itself. Okay, now this can also be written as a compound because I have two if statements. And so I can write if inventory code equals A and amount is greater than 5,000, move okay to message. So that can be written as a compound. Now when I translate that into a language, the language may not allow the use of the word and. It may want a percent sign thing there. Not percent sign, ampersand. It may want an ampersand there or two ampersands. Or it may have another symbol. But there may be a symbol instead of the and. Okay? Now on this one, I have put together a no. So if inventory code equals A, and amount is greater than 5,000, move okay to message. If either of them are a no, I'm moving problem to message. Okay, so if either of them are no, I'm moving problem to message. So I have it written out, if inventory code equals A, if amount is greater than 5,000, move okay to message. Else, and else works like an end if. It attaches itself to the first available if, going backwards. So it attaches to that. So else, move problem to message. End if, ends that if. Okay? Then this else needs to find an unattached if, so it goes up to the if inventory code equals A, and the end if does as well. So that's how it attaches itself. So I'm saying if amount is greater than 5,000, move okay to message, else move problem to message, end that if. That is all of the stuff that I'm doing if inventory code is A. If inventory code is not equal to A, I do the else move problem to message. Okay? But if inventory code equals A and amount, then I ask the question if amount is greater than 5,000 and I finish dealing with that if on the yes branch. Okay. Now, because these two things are the same, because they are the same, I can use a compound. I can, I don't have to. I can use a compound. So I'm saying here, if inventory code equals A, and amount is greater than 5,000, move okay to message. Else, move problem to message. Which means if either of these things is false, or from that matter, if both of these things are false, I'm going to take the else. Okay, when you have two situations, these are the possibles you can have. You can have why. Yes, yes to both questions. Yes, yes to both questions means I want to move okay. Anything else, I don't want to move okay. I only want to move okay if I get two yeses. anything else, I don't want to move, okay. Well, what are the anything else's? I can have a YN, I can have an NY, and I can have an NN. Okay, those are problems. Now, in fact, logically, I don't have to check them, those little four things I could have. But in fact, logically, I don't have to check them. So YY is a yes to both of them. Y and then an N, N to amount greater than 5,000 means no problem. But in fact, the last two both have a no. If I have a no over here, I never even ask about the second question. Because if inventory code isn't equal to A, I don't even have to ask about the second one because I only want to say okay if both are true. If I get a no, then both can't be true. So if I get a no, I say, well, problem the message, and I don't even check to see whether amount greater than 5,000 is a yes or a no, because I don't care. If I got a no to inventory code, I'm done. Okay, so if I get two yeses, I want to move okay. Anything else, I want to move out the message problem. Now, if I have this situation, here I want to do something. Yeah, I do not want to do anything if the inventory code equals A. And I do want to do something if amount is greater, is not greater than 5,000. Okay? So, in this case, I have do nothing if inventory code is not A, and move problem if amount is greater than 5,000. Can I make that a compound? No. Because if I have a compound, I'd say if inventory code equals A, if amount is greater than 5,000, move OK to message. Else, and now I got a problem, else, do I do nothing, or do I do this? Okay, it's unclear what I would put in the else because the two conditions have different results if I get no's. And so I can't make this a compound. This cannot be a compound because the responses are not the same. You know, I do not have the same responses. So that means I can't do a compound. Questions? It's your job to ask questions if you are confused. I think I'm clear as anything. Okay. There was an attendance sheet, so if you came in and didn't sign it at some point, you should sign it. Not now, at the end of class. Okay, the next one was this. Okay, so if inventory code is A, I ask about amount greater than 500. And if it is, I'm going to locate a message. If it's not greater than 5,000, I'm going to problem the message. I end that if. Now, if inventory code is not equal to A, I move a bad Kellum to message. Could this be made into a compound? Mm-hmm. No. Right? Because these are different. These two are different. So the else doesn't have anything to do. I say if inventory code equals A and amount greater than 5,000, move OK to message else. Which one of those do I put in the else? Whichever one I choose, I'm wrong half the time, okay? So I can't put any of those in there. so they're different, so no compound. Okay, number 9. Now I'm starting to look at all relationships. And again, think back to access. In access, if you have an and relationship, they both went on the criteria line. If you had an or relationship, one went on the criteria line, one went on the or line. Okay? So here, I'm saying, but either one of them could have gotten the record displayed. And that's pretty much what I do in access, is make the determination whether or not to display the record. Here, I'm making more complex things some places. So I'm saying, if inventory coding was A, move OK to message. If it's not, second chance. Is amount greater than 500, move OK to message. If it's not, I'm out of chances, and I do nothing. So if either one of those are true, I'm going to move OK to message. Now notice how that is done in the pseudocode. I said if inventory code equals A, move OK. Else, meaning the no of the inventory question. Else, ask about amount. If amount is greater than 5,000, move OK. And I don't have anything to do in the no if amount is not greater than 5,000, so I just end that if. There's no else. If I had something over here on the no on amount greater than 5,000, then I'd have something to put in an else. But I don't. So I just end the if, and then I end the other if. Now, can this be made into a compound?
Yes.
Yes. Because I'm basically saying, if inventory code equals A, or amount is greater than 5,000, move OK. End if. I don't have any else. Okay. So if you look at 10, I have the or in there. It can be made a compound. Because I'm doing the same thing. These are the same. And so I can have a compound. They're the same, so I can use a compound. And so I'm saying if inventory code equals A, or amount is greater than 5,000, move OK to message. I don't have anything to do if they're not. I have two chances. If the two chances aren't true, I have nothing to do. Okay, number 11. This one is saying if inventory code equals A, move OK. If not, ask about amount, and if it's greater than 5,000, move OK. Otherwise, move problem. So notice that the entire part about amount is embedded in the else, which is the no on the inventory code equals A. If inventory code equals A, move OK. Else, do this. Ask the next question and respond to it. And then I end the A. Can this be made compound?
Yes.
Because I have something to put in the else, right? Okay, that is supposed to be something that slides. Well, let's see. That brought it up. Okay, so there is the compound. I asked, is inventory equal to A or amount greater than 5,000? Move okay, else move problem. So that works. It's the compound. Sorry, I keep walking in front of you. Okay, 13. Can this be made into a compound?
No.
No. And why?
You don't have any.
Two different messages.
Two different messages. These two messages are different. So I want to act differently depending on which one I get a yes to. I want to act differently. So since they're different, I have to code it out the way I did here with simple if statements. If inventory code equals A, move one message, else check and see if it's greater than 5,000. If it is, move a different message. And then if it's neither of those, move a third message. Questions? I can't possibly be that clear, so somebody's got a question. Okay, come on. Okay, this one is one that we looked at in Access quite a bit, on the logic of it. In this flowchart, what has to be true?
Inventory
code has to be in A. So this has to be true. And if that is true, then either of the two other things have to be true. You remember hearing about that in Access. Either of these other things have to be true. So inventory code has to be A. And if it is, one of the others have to be true to get the message okay. In Access, it would have been to get the record to display. Here it is to get the message okay. If I get a no, that neither of these are true, and I ask both questions, and if I get a no to both of them, then it's not displayed. And if inventory code equals not equal to A, I do nothing. Okay? So this is the situation where one thing has to be true and either of two others. So I'm asking, is inventory code equal A? If it is, then is amount greater than 5,000? If it is, move okay. Else, if it's not, second chance, is amount second greater than 200? If it is, move okay. If it's not, I've run out of chances, there's no else, so I end the if, end the if, end the if. And again, notice that I take the bottom if, the first if connected to that. The next if connects up there. The next if connects up there. Because an if can only have one end if. Okay? So, can this be made a compound?
Yes.
Yes. And if you look ahead, there is the compound. Let me get that a little out of the way. So, I'm saying if inventory code equals A, and this should look like SQL if you've done the SQL, because I've got the parenthesis in there to say either. And either amount is greater than 5,000 or amount second is greater than 2,000. And if either of those are true, I move okay. If inventory code is not A, I'm out of there. If neither of the inner ones are true, then I'm out of there. Okay? so I can write that as a compound, but I need the parentheses because ands get resolved before ors, and we'll see the problem in a minute of not having the parentheses there. Okay. Another way you could write this is in 16. And I could write it as, if inventory code equals A, then drop down and ask the other two questions. Is amount first greater than 5,000 or amount second greater than 2,000, move OK to message. And that works equally well. Okay, that works just fine. Now, if I forget the parentheses, this just is determined to be in the wrong place. And it can't just be dragged. It has to be moved. Okay, with a command. Wonderful. Okay, so here I left out the parentheses. Okay, I've got no parentheses. So that means these two get grouped and this one stands alone. Okay, so inventory code equals A and amount first greater than 500 get combined and resolved first, and amount second greater than 200 stands alone. And that is because ands are resolved before ors. So that means the two ands get grouped together and the or stands by itself. So that means when I ask this question, I'm saying if inventory code equals A and amount first is greater than 500, move OK to message. If amount first isn't greater than 500, I can then ask the standalone question, is amount second greater than 200? And if it is, I move OK. Now, if I get a node inventory code, I still have to ask the standalone question, is amount second greater than 200? If it is, move OK to message. So when I left out the parentheses, it's a whole different problem. Is inventory code equal A and amount first greater than 500? Or just is amount second greater than 200 and I don't care about the inventory code. Now, that may be what I wanted, but that is not what I implied that I wanted a few slides back. Okay. So, that is a problem. Now, another way you could have coded the problem is in slide 18, where I chose to ask the standalone question first. So I said, okay, is amount second greater than 200? So I asked that question first. If I got a no to it, then is inventory code equal A and is amount first greater than 500? Okay. The flowchart looks a lot simpler on that because I asked the standalone question first. And it doesn't matter which question you ask first. I want one or the other, so it doesn't matter which I ask first.
So it doesn't cut off the end first?
No. It resolves left to right, just like you do in algebra. Okay, it resolves from left to right. And I always have to stop and make sure I've got left and right correct. Okay, now on this one, I added in a no and I changed the messages. So I can't have it compound. I said, if inventory code equals A and amount first is greater than 500, move this message. If inventory code equals A, but amount first is not greater than 500, I get another chance. Is amount second greater than 200? is, I move that message. Otherwise, I move the problem message. If inventory code is not A, I do nothing. Okay? So in the pseudocode, I'm saying, is it A? Is amount first greater than 500? Move that message. Else, which is a no, ask this question. And I have the whole amount second greater than 200 question embedded in the no. Then I end the inner if, and I end the outer if without an else, because I have nothing to do with inventory code is not A.
Instead of else, can we use parentheses?
Does the same thing
that was
saying?
Say that again. Instead
of
using else, we can use a parentheses, yeah? Or
else would be else. No, else is not the equivalent of the parentheses. The parentheses lets me say either of these two things, but it's not the equivalent of the else. The else is getting a no to one of the questions. Okay. Then the last one, I have something on everything, and all the messages are different. And this one can't be a compound because all the messages are different, but I basically added an else for inventory code. So I have something to do if inventory code is not equal. Everything else is the same as it was in the previous problem. It's just in the previous problem I didn't have the else. Questions? That scares me. So when I first learned this, I had a lot of questions. I probably didn't ask them either, but I had them. Okay, this will come back to haunt you, folks. Okay. Okay, the second thing I want to look at is back to my homepage. I want to look at practice continued. And then we will look at loops after we've looked at that. So I want to look at practice continued.
Okay. I think the record will show up bigger if you enable editing, because for me it looks bigger.
Ooh, I should have thought of that. Thank you. Okay, so now what I've got is I've got a file. That could be a table. When files are part of a database, they call tables. When they're kind of standalone things, they're frequently called files. Okay, so a file is a collection of data. And again, if it's part of a database, it is usually called a table. Now, I put headers at the top of every one of these columns. The file would not contain those. I just put them so you know what they were. But the file would have a series of records, just like the tables that you made in Access have a series of records. When you have a file, usually there is a marker at the end of the file, and this is EOF, which stands for end of file. So there's a marker that tells you that you're at the end of the file so that it will stop reading. Okay, so this file has four records on it. Now, one style that is very widely used is the style I've used here, which is that you do an initializing read. Okay, so I'm doing an initializing read. Oh, that was good. It's decided I shouldn't write out there, apparently. whatever. Okay, so I'm doing an initializing read. And that initializing read is going to read the first record. So this initializing read is going to come up here and read the first record. Okay? I have tried the red pen and it gave me black. I have tried the blue pen and it gave me black. And a few minutes ago I was getting the right colors, right?
Yeah. Maybe it's better when it's in just the read only view, but
I'm not even sure how to get that back.
Just close that and reopen it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well,
it's one or the other.
It's one or the other. You can either read it or you can have color.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm reading the first record, and we're going to see if... Actually, I'm going to do this with you without color, but when I put it up on the board, I'll take the last class's version that had color because it really is easier to read.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever. So, I take the initializing read and I read these things. Now, on the file, I have a paper hour, a regular hours, and an overtime hour. Okay? I also am going to have work areas where I am going to store information. And those work areas are going to be regular pay, overtime pay, and total pay. Okay? So those are work areas that I set up because I'm doing calculations and I'm putting the answers into those work areas. So, on the first record, I read the first record, do while not in the file. It's not in the file. So I go into the loop. And the first question is overtime hours greater than zero? Well, I just read John Doe's record. Is overtime hours greater than zero?
Yes.
Yes. So I drop down and say regular pay equals pay per hour times regular hours. So what is John Doe regular pay?
40.
No, 20.
Regular.
Regular. Pay. I don't see it.
Pay.
It's pay per hour, reg pay, I'm calculating, and it's equal to pay per hour times regular hours. What's 20 times 40?
800.
So the regular pay is 800. Okay, now I'm calculating overtime pay. Overtime pay is pay per hour, which is 20, times overtime hours, which is 10, times 1.5. So what is overtime pay?
350?
Not 350, 300. Because I've got 20 times 10 is 300, and times 1.5, I mean it's 200, sorry. I'm listening to you. 20 times 10 is 200, and 1 times 5 is 300. So now, what is the overtime pay? I'm sorry, what is the total pay?
1100.
So I've calculated that, and now I go to the display, and it would have been better if I probably said, display the person's name and their pay, but I didn't. I said just simply display total pay. So there's the 1100 for total pay. I'm displaying it. As soon as I display it, the next thing I do is I go and read the next record. So I read the next record. Now notice how this works. I am reading an initializing record. to have something to process the first time. From there on in, after I process, I read another record, and then I immediately loop back and check to see if it was in the file. So I read, and then I don't do anything until I loop back and check to make sure that I didn't read an empty record or read nothing, that I read data, that it's not in the file. So I read the record, and then I loop back, okay? So I loop back here, and then I say, okay, is overtime hours greater than zero? For Ann Koster, is it greater than zero?
No.
So now I then take the else, and I figure out her pay, which is what? 25 times 40, which is? Don't you dare pull out a calculator.
1,000.
Total pay is 1,000, okay? 25 times 40 is 1,000. I then display the 1,000. And then I read, so I go back and I read the next record. Okay, so I'm reading Linda Ryan. So as soon as I read, I go back. Is it not in the file? No, it's not in the file. I successfully read. Is overtime hours greater than zero? Yes, it is. What is regular pay for Linda?
Regular.
30 times 40, right? Pay per hour, which is 30, times regular hours, which is 40. So 30 times 40 is what? 1,200, right? So now this is 1,200. Then what is overtime pay? 30 times 20, which is what? 600 times 1.5, 900. And so what is the total pay on this one? Regular pay plus overtime pay, it's 2,100. And so then I display 2,100, and then I read another record. Okay, and this is Bob, and it's not in the file. His overtime hours is greater than zero. What's his regular pay? $1,050?
Yeah.
So that's $1,050. What is his overtime pay?
$450.
So what's the total pay?
$1,500.
And I display that, and I go back to read another record, and this time I hit end of file. So I've hit end of file, so my processing is done. I drop out and I stop the program. Okay? Do you see the logic that went through there? Okay. What I'm doing here is processing a file of data, and I am stopping with each record and doing processing. Okay. Now, I probably, okay, is clear ink. Oh, come on. Clear ink. That's not what I want. I want to clear the ink. It's not working. Okay, somebody asked in the other class, and I'm not sure how I'm going to fit this in, but what would happen if I wanted to get the total pay for everybody as I was going along? And what I told them I would do is, right after I did the display, technology is a wonderful thing when occasionally it works. Okay, so right after I did the display, I would put in something like, all pay equals all pay plus tote pay. So I would set up a variable called all pay. And every time I went through processing, I would add all pay, I would add tote pay to all pay and store it back into all pay. So all pay would keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And we will get into that later. But as I said, somebody asked about that. So I will be saying, take tote pay, add it to a variable called all pay. And so the first time I did that, it would be all pay would be 1100. Okay? Then I would say, okay, next time through, take 1000, add it to 1100, and put it in all pay. And all pay would become 2100. And then the next time through, I would say, add 2100 to 2100. Be up, and every time I would add, and it would keep growing, so that all pay would end up being the sum of all of these. And then when I wanted to see it, at the end of the program, I would say, display all pay. So I would display all pay when I was done with the loop, just before I stopped the program. So that is how I could have accumulated the total and then printed it out. Any questions? Yes.
So I'm a little confused. You know how like it loops back and it does the next one?
Yes.
What's making it go down one? What's like stopping it from just doing John Doe twice?
Mainly because it's been programmed behind the scenes that it will move through the file one record at a time. Okay, and as long as you give the read, by definition, what a read does is move to the next record. Okay, so that's the kind of the definition of the word read, is it moves down to the next record.
Okay,
and that's programmed behind the scenes. There's a lot that happens when you have a command in a programming language. One command that you write can end up generating 20 commands behind the scenes that it does to accomplish that.
All right.
Okay? Okay, questions?
Say you wanted to display the name with the tote pay. Enter it on the display line?
Yes. Or I could have another display line. If I wanted to be one right underneath each other, I'd put in two display lines probably. If not, I'd write display, whatever I call the name, comma, tope. Because most languages let you separate two things you want to do by a comma. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah.
So would a for each statement do the same thing?
Yes. I did a do while, but you can have, there's a whole lot of different do statements and while statements and for statements. I could go through this with a for. Okay. I'm going to close Word down because we don't seem to be getting along well. Just out of curiosity, because this is still there. Oh, I got my color back.
Okay, so it's that's a pain, though.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a total pain. But we now know. Okay, the next thing I want to do is the presentation on structure, focus on loops. So I want to go through that. Now, this is a very simplistic view of loops. There's a lot more complexity that goes on. This is just a very simplistic set of things. The first thing here is that these are the three things that I've mentioned them before that you need to have a programming language. One is you need to be able to do sequence, move down one instruction at a time. The other one is you need to have an if, where I can say, ask a question and have something to do if it's true, something to do if it's false. And then the other thing is a loop. And with a loop, I have the condition over here, and I have the condition to continue the loop, then I process, and then I loop back. And we're going to look at that processing and loop back thing in this PowerPoint. Okay, so on the first one, I've got a loop where I drop down to hit the loop. I ask the question, should I continue processing? If it's yes, I process, and then I go back and ask. Should I continue? Yes, process, go back and ask. Eventually, I get a no, and I drop out. Okay? In this case, I'm asking the question, should I process before I process? Okay, so I'm asking the question. So if I get a no to the question up front, I won't do any processing. I'll just drop out. Another type of loop has you process once and then ask the question. So here I'm doing the processing, whatever it is, once, and then I'm asking, do you want to do it again? But with this setup, I always do it once. I always process once. And the programmer may decide that they want to process once and then ask if they should do it again, okay? So this processes, then ask if I should do it again. If I want to do it again, I take the yes and go up and process and ask if I want to do it again. Okay. So now, this is very much like what we looked at before, where I've got the initializing read. So it's the example we just looked at, where I have the initializing read. So I read the record. And then I said, if it's not in the file, process. And process was where I calculated the person's pay. Okay? And then after I calculate the person's pay, I read another record. And as soon as I read the record, I go back and check. Not in the file, I process the record I read and read another one. Go back, as long as it's not in the file. So that follows the looping that we did in that program that we just went through. Okay? So I have an initializing read and I have a read that will read everything. Now, okay, here I am doing some processing. And I'm saying, okay, let's say that the start point is 1 and the stop point is 5. So I am saying right up front, the counter is equal to the start point. So that means the counter is going to be 1. So I go down in the processing and I say, is counter less than the stop point? Well, yes, 1 is less than 5. So I process. And let's say my processing is I'm going to just write out what counter is. So I'm writing out the counter equals one. And then I increment counter. So counter is now a two. I go back, is counter less than stop point? No. I mean, yes, yeah. Is counter less than stop point? Yes. So I process and I write out counter equals two. And then I increment counter. And I go back, is counter less than stop point? Yes, it is. So I write out the counter equals three. And then I increment counter, and it's now a four. And then I go back, is counter less than the stop point? Yes. So I write counter equals four. Okay. Then I increment counter, and I go back. And now counter is not less than stop point. Okay, it's not less than stop point. So I drop out. So I'm done. And what I've got is, these are the three things that you have to do that I mentioned last time on Tuesday. I have to initialize the counter or the variable, whatever my control is. And in this case, my control is counter. Initialize is the control outside the loop to a specific start point, and I set it to one. Then test the counter to determine whether or not to enter the loop. Counter less than stop point is my test. And then increment the counter inside the loop. Change the control. So I'm incrementing the counter or changing the control, and it keeps growing. Eventually, it will get me out. But if I don't change the counter, then it will stay one forever, and I will do this forever. Okay. Now, if I had had a start point up here that meant that I didn't hit the stop point, let's say I'd started with six, then I would never have done any processing. Okay? Because the counter less than stop point, I would get a no if I had initialized it at six. Six wouldn't be less than five. So I would never enter the processing. Okay, so I would never enter the processing. Okay. Now on this one, I am setting the counter equal to start point, and we'll use one and five again. And I'm saying, okay, start counter out at one. So I go down and I immediately process. I haven't asked about anything. I immediately process. So I write out counter equal one. I haven't checked. So I will always process here. No matter what start point and end point are, I'm going to process because I'm not asking about it. I'm not asking about the start point. I'm not asking about the end point. I'm not asking about anything. I will always do it once. Okay? So then I processed. Then I increment the counter, and it's up to two. I check. Is the counter not equal to stop point? Not equal, so I write out counter equals two. Okay, and then I go back and I process, and that's what I wrote out, counter equals two. I increment the counter to three. I check, is counter not equal to five? It's not, so I go back up, I process, and I write out counter equals three. Then I increment the counter up to four. I go down, as counter is not equal to the stop point. So I go back and I process. I write out counter equal 4. Okay. I increment the counter as 5. I check, is the counter not equal? They are equal. So I drop out and I'm done. Okay.
If there's no stop point.
Well, this is the stop point, is I drop out and I do whatever I'm doing down here. I just illustrated the loop, but I could be doing more processing down here or I could just end the program, okay? Now, testing the counter not equal is probably not a good thing, because if I put in numbers to kind of show that it always works once where the start point is a big number or something, catching an equal is always dangerous. So it's always better to use a less than and greater than test as opposed to an equal, because if the numbers I use don't happen to, if I use a start point of 10 and a stop point of 5, okay, it's never going to hit 5, and so it won't work. So using equal is an iffy thing to do. Questions? Somehow I always get done faster in your class because you're not asking questions. So that means you're understanding. Okay, let me clear out this. I'm not quite done, so don't rush yet. Okay. The in-class exercise, as I said, I'm going to move because we don't have enough time to really go through that, and I want to spend a little more time on it. Okay, the logic assignment that you have to do is this. Okay, so these are like the ones that we did the last time, where I'm starting out and I've set up a bunch of variables, and I am going through the loop. And what I've got here is setting up the variables is my housekeeping. This is my processing. And writing out a final answer might be considered wrap up, or it might be considered processing. But I'm only doing it once, and that's kind of the definition of what's in wrap up. Processing is what you want to do once before you start. Processing is usually a loop that you're doing over and over and over again. If you're reading a file, you're reading it 100 times, so you're doing it over and over and over again. And how many records there are. And usually wrap up is defined as something you do once on the way out. So adding up the results of what I got from the processing and then displaying it is a one-time thing, so it's considered wrap up. Okay. You can make an argument that it's part of processing, or you can make an argument that it's part of wrap up. So what I want you to do is to go through these different problems. And I've given you a hint, if you don't get one of these 5 numbers, you didn't get the right answer. So at least we've ruled it out if you didn't get one of those 5 answers. Okay? So what you've got to do is go through that and figure that out. Now, there are a series of those, and then we get down to problem 7. And problem 7, wow. I've never seen it do that before. It's missing a line. I will go back in and fix that. I've never seen it do that, and I've given this assignment more than once. Huh.
It doesn't look like that on
It looks all right on yours?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just lucky. All right. It's been kind of the way my day's been going. So, anyway, these are the records that are there. This is the code that you're going to follow. And you're going to say, show the output that would be generated if this pseudocode is executed using the data shown. Now notice I said display true order. That's all I'm displaying. So when you give me the results, you should have just displayed true order. So how many numbers are you going to give me as the answer for that one? No?
Two.
Because I'm processing six records, right? So each time I process a record, I want to see display true order. Okay? So that means you're going to show me six numbers. One for each record that you showed me. One for each record that I have in the file. I did count right, six, yes. So one for each record in the file. So you're going to show me six answers. Okay? Then the next one, or not the next one, but one down here further, has a flowchart. And so you're going to follow the flowchart. Okay? Go and do check means go and do the procedure called check. And so when you go and do the procedure called check, there's the procedure called check. You go out, you execute it, and then you return and continue on your way. So it really is, yeah. Let me go up one there. It's really like all of that code in check was right here. But if I had to fit all that code in, it gets messy. So rather than do that, I say, go do a procedure. It goes out and does it. When it returns, the next thing it does is read the inventory record. So it goes out and does it, and when it comes back, it reads inventory record. Okay? So check is called a procedure. So I'm saying read a record, as long as it's not in the file, go out and do check, and then when you come back, read another inventory record. And I've got the inventory records there for you to read. Okay. Questions? Okay, we are done. Yes. Okay.
How do you want to submit the answers? Do you want us to like email you what the answers are?
Yes.
All right.
Yep.